when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Helen.
And this is the Squiggly Careers Podcast. In the next few episodes, we're doing something a little bit different. We're focusing on some of the factors outside of work that we think will help you to succeed in work. And the topics we're covering are health, sleep, money, and relationships. And we're absolutely not the expert in any of these topics. So we've decided to choose a different book to both read. And in our conversations together, we'll be talking about what we've learned and how it's helped us, and hopefully how it might help you too.
You realise, Sarah, that our work should be transformed by the end of this series.
Right. I mean, let's maybe wait until after today's conversation before we decide whether that's true or not. Because today we are focusing on money. And I think it's fair to say of all of the four topics, we have found this one quite tricky to discover the right books that we thought were going to be helpful for everybody listening. So Helen, do you want to talk to us a bit about what book you have ended up choosing and why?
Yeah, I started and stopped with a few and I was like, this isn't useful. And I ended up with one which was interesting. I've had to work quite hard to make it useful, but I didn't think I could pick up and put down another book on money. So I've gone with a book that has had over 1 million copies sold, it proudly says on the front, The Psychology of Money, Timeless Lessons on Wealth, Greed and Happiness by Morgan Housel.
So, similar to Helen, I started and stopped quite a few different books. Now, I do want to give a shout out to one book that I did read and just didn't quite work for our podcast format, but was a useful read. And that was Money, A User's Guide. And that's by Laura Whatley. I've seen it in loads of bookshops, gets really good reviews and ratings. And I think as a practical guide to finance, it is really helpful. It will tell you what an ISA is. It'll explain how renting works. But it's almost so relentlessly practical. It didn't really, unless I was going to come on the podcast and talk to you about ISAs and savings, it didn't really feel like it was going to work. But that was a useful book on money. And I've recommended it actually to a few people. I think perhaps particularly if you are starting out, it was one of those books, you know, you think, oh, I wish I'd read that in my early 20s, because I think sort of Laura's own experience with money as well, she sort of reflects a bit on that, but it is a really good practical guide. Then I read a few others that I really did start and stop and thought this is not very useful or was going in lots of different directions. And then I thought I'll pick a book that I would never normally read, because I think this series is an opportunity for us to do something a bit different. So I read a book called You Are a Badass at Making Money by Jen Sincero, and her books have sold lots and they get incredibly good reviews, thousands and thousands of reviews. But it is not a book I would have ever picked off the shelf. I think the title would have perhaps put me off, if I'm honest. And even how it's described, I was like, oh, this doesn't really feel like something I would normally spend time with. But I think it's good to challenge your assumptions.
Yourself. Your growth mindset was in action.
It was. And I thought, okay, do you know what? I've not really read very many books on money. So let's see. And then let's see if I think this would help me with me and my career. So should we dive into what have we learned about money? Do you want to go first?
Yes. Okay. So bearing in mind, mine is a bit more psychological given the nature of the book. The first thing that I learned, being rich is different to being wealthy.
Tell me more.
I'll tell you more. Okay. So I've written down rich equals your current income. So cash and flash is what I wrote down.
Right.
So like your current income, your ability to take yourself out for a nice dinner, to buy yourself some nice clothes. Like if you can afford to do that, you are sort of rich today. But that is different to wealthy, because in the book he says that wealth is hidden. So it's not cash that you flash. It's the stuff that you can't see.
Okay.
It is basically income not spent. So you have that money, but you are choosing not to spend it.
So like savings.
Well, yes, and we'll get on to savings.
Right. Second thing I learned was about savings. But I thought that was quite interesting, actually, just to distinguish between just because you see somebody, let's say you see someone who's got lots of things, you're like, oh, wow, they always dress really well, or they've got a nice, I don't know, they look nice, or they've got nice things. That might mean that they've got a lot of current income, but that is different to someone who is wealthy, because the point in the book is that actually someone who's wealthy has money that you can't see. It might be invested or it might be saved. And actually over the longer term, wealth is what matters.
Okay.
Okay. So that was the first thing I thought was an interesting thing to reflect on. On to savings, Sarah.
Okay.
Here you go. Savings are the gap between your ego and your income.
Ooh, which I liked. More.
And it said, there was a nice little quote in the book. It says, savings can be created by spending less. You can spend less if you desire less. You will desire less if you care less about what other people think, which is where that ego bit comes in. I thought that was really interesting. Like, how much of your spending is driven by something that you want to acquire because it will influence what other people think of you? And I don't think a lot of people would admit that, but are you dressing nicely because it makes you feel good, or because it's to fit in with other people, or it's what's expected of you in a certain group? Or are you buying a new car because your friends have, or is it because, you know, you generally think it's going to get you to another place more comfortably or faster? That kind of stuff. I thought it was interesting. Savings are the gap between your ego and your income. What do you think about this statement?
I was just trying to think about anything that I spend money on that feels more ego related, because I think I'm more of a saver than a spender. What would you describe yourself as?
You know the answer to that. You know, I was reading this with like two different... So Sarah and I are like super different with money, and I'm definitely more like rich and Sarah's more wealth, I would say, based on what we've got to. Because I do like buying things, and I don't really know whether it's ego-driven, though. It did make me question, like, I just really like nice things, and I like nice clothes and nice watches and nice things. Like, I've always... Like, Sarah and I have known each other 20 years, and that has always been me, right? I've always been that person who's...
And I was just thinking, I think, do you know, I was thinking more about you when you were talking about ego than I was about me, because I was thinking, I'm not sure your purchases are driven by ego. I think they're driven by enjoyment.
Yes, I think they are too. I just like a new bag and I like it all. Though it did make me think, I'm considering buying a new watch, and I was like, but am I buying this new watch for ego, or am I buying it because I just like a new watch? And it's really made me pause on my decision purchase.
And I think that's one of the things that you and I were together yesterday, and we were talking about some of the challenges of finding useful books on money. But we were both saying that almost the process has encouraged us to reflect on our relationship with money. And it did remind me that when I was younger, I used to have, you know, when you go to a bank, they give you the little bags for putting money in.
And
I don't
know.
Yeah, the little see-through small bags.
The little plastic ones for your pennies. I thought you meant like some kind of like, I was like, how much money did you have to take out of the bank?
Millions.
Some tote bag or something.
No, you know the little small ones that you get. Well, I used to when I was younger.
Yeah, to count pennies.
Yeah, so I used to save up like 5p's and 10p's and 20p's. And so from like my pocket money or money that I'd got, and I would like keep all of that money. I've got quite vivid memories now I've thought about it, like almost like hoarding. And I just quite liked it. I liked the seeing it grow. And I'd not even got anything specific that I was saving for, which I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. It wasn't like I was motivated by, oh, I'm saving up for this, you know, magazine as a kid or this top that I want to buy. I just liked the, oh, that feels good that I have saved that money. And I wonder whether that probably says quite a lot about you in terms of your relationship with money is like, maybe I'm assuming a bit probably how you grew up, what your parents were like, but that I've probably always slightly been more of a saver.
It's so funny. I was just thinking about children and I went for a walk this weekend with my children and my daughter Madeline. We were walking in a forest and she decided this was a great time to wear a pink mouse bag.
Obviously.
Which I didn't realise she'd got. Anyway, we're walking in the forest and she's got a pink mouse bag on and it's jangling as she's walking. I'm like, Madeline, what's in your bag? She's like, oh, money, mummy. And I was like, okay, she's 5. And I was like, what money? She's like, all the pennies. She's like, do you want some money? And literally for the rest of the walk, she's like, do you want some money? She was just trying to give the money. She decided to take a bag full of pennies on a walk in a forest in a pink mouse bag. And then she was just like, do you want to give some away? And I was like, oh, it's probably a bit like me being like, oh, I've got it. I always used to be when I was younger, but this is where I think we're different. I would always go on holiday with my dad and I would have some spending money. for this trip. And we used to go to like National Trust properties all the time. We used to take the three C's holiday. What was it? Castles, churches and cathedrals. Which always, always feature in a holiday with my dad. And I would go to like the National Trust shop with my £2 or whatever I was given. And my mission would be to spend every single penny. There was no saving going on when I was 5 or 6. So yeah, I think we might have some differences, Sarah, possibly. My last learning that I have noted down was that flexibility and control over your time is an unseen return on wealth. And the point in the book is that, yes, money can buy you things, fine, but actually one of the biggest things that money, so your savings, can buy you is freedom and flexibility. And people don't necessarily consider the value of that because it's perhaps a bit intangible, but it gives you choices. And I just think very much about what that has enabled us to do. So when Sarah and I started our business over 10 years ago, we saved all of the money. I mean, in the beginning, it didn't really make a lot, but every little bit it made, we saved. And it meant that when we were considering leaving our corporate roles, you know, sort of 7 years on from when that business started, and we were considering leaving our corporate roles, because we hadn't spent the money that had accumulated during our work on a side project over 7 years, suddenly we had this choice of, okay, well, one of us could leave our corporate job and we've got sort of like a 6-month financial runway to see whether we can turn this side project into a viable business that could actually pay us both a salary. And we wouldn't have had that flexibility and that freedom had we not saved those funds. And so I think I really related to that point in the book when I read it.
Also, what is interesting is you and I have a very different, I think, personal approach to money. But from a business perspective, we don't argue about money.
That's
ever.
Yeah.
We don't. It never causes we argue about other stuff or have, you know, heated debates or whatever we want to call them, whatever I'm meant to more positively call them. And there are other things I think we definitely disagree on. But actually, money has never been a challenge for us so far, which I do think is interesting given we have different kind of personal starting points. And maybe that's because we're aligned in what we're trying to do and how we want to do that. I don't know, but I do find that interesting. So a couple of things that I learned from the book. The first one was around the complications in terms of our relationship with money. Money is something that we don't talk about, lots of people don't talk about, and that it can cause friction. And one of the things that Jen says is that the beliefs that we have, and sometimes these beliefs are quite limiting, really impact our relationship with money. So she sort of uses this equation where she says, your thoughts inspire your emotions, which inspire your actions, and then that forms your reality. And her argument is that sometimes we are very attached to the unhelpful familiar, which is her sort of starting to point to why you might stay in a job that feels very safe and secure, because you'd be worried that, okay, well, if I did go to run my own business or I did try to do something different, you know, what are the financial implications of that? And we're always kind of happier with kind of what we already know. And it's sort of about our relationship a bit with uncertainty. And I was thinking about, I think for me, from a money perspective, as I've got older, as I've kind of grown into an adult away from my 5p money bags from a kid, I do think I've got some limiting beliefs around money because I wasn't very good at maths at school. So I was like, oh, because I actually think from a thought perspective, I always think I'm just not very good at numbers. I think then my emotion is I'm nervous about money. I get quite nervous about, oh, I don't think I understand. I don't think I would be able to make kind of good decisions. And then in terms of the actions that inspires, I think that makes me very cautious. And it means that I would always sort of play it very, very safe in terms of the money that I've got. So I hate the idea of losing money that I've earned. So, you know, I'm sure you should like invest, you know, to make good returns or whatever. And I've got friends who do that, who almost like quite enjoy, you know, like dabbling with maybe buying some stocks and shares, which probably the way I'm describing this shows just how little I know about this. But I've definitely
money into these investment things.
Which tells you everything you need to know about my finances. But you know the idea, and you know, you always, I also worked in a bank, like I worked for Barclays. But you know, you always get that disclaimer, you know, with your investments, your money can go up and down and you need to be aware of that. And I was like, the idea that money that I have worked hard to earn could go down, I find that really difficult to get my head around. I also get that then there's a really big upside that you could invest in something that then you could there could be really big rewards. But you know, that kind of risk reward thing, I was like, I think I am, it really made me think I am quite risk averse. It's why I don't have like loads of savings, or, you know, like Helen and I have talked about, we sort of need to sort our pensions out and all those kind of things. Like we are definitely not role models at all when it comes to money. But I from reading the book and thinking a bit more about money, it definitely made me think about what are the beliefs that I've got that might sometimes get in my way around money. So I found that quite interesting. Mm. As you go through the book, there are some questions and sort of exercises that I did find useful to consider. So one of the questions was, write down 5 positive words to describe money. And I was like, oh, that's quite interesting. Just like see what words you would write down. So I wrote down opportunity, presence, freedom, experience, and food.
Nice. Nice.
Because I was like, oh, and I actually think that is a good exercise. Yeah, I was like, oh, you know, right. Like what, it's kind of what does money mean to you?
And especially, you know, you talked about feeling nervous about money. I think those words could help you to create a more positive association with it.
Yeah, which is exactly what I think Jen is encouraging you to try to do. And then almost finish this sentence. I'm grateful to money because. So, you know, if you have almost like, you're not sure how you feel about money, or perhaps you worry about, you know, sometimes you feel a bit uncertain about having money, or maybe apologetic about money. So like, what is good about money? Like why it's a good thing, we should try and have a good relationship with money.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
And then one of the other things I like that she suggested, the book is very into manifestation and visualization.
Your favorite thing.
Which I found challenging at times. I think it's fair to say we'll come on to that. But one of the exercises, which I do think could be helpful, is to do what you would like a day in your life to be like. So almost like be really specific. And I think that's quite a fun exercise. And you might do one version of a day in the life that doesn't feel too far away from where you are today. And maybe you do one really ambitious one. And so you do a couple of those. And then you sort of ask yourself the question, and what does that mean in terms of like money, and what does that mean in terms of like finances? So if that is a day in the life that I'm really motivated by, or that I'm working towards, like what does that mean that I would need to do, or the decisions that I might need to make? Because one of the points that she does make is sort of, if you want to change your finances, you have to be prepared to make changes. You know, it's not just going to happen. You have got to proactively make some choices and some decisions. So I thought those were some useful things as we went through the book. And then my final thing is something a bit different and is cheating. So I ran out of things from the book.
Never a good sign. Never a good sign.
And then I listened instead to an episode of TED Business called The Emotions.
This is such a cheat, Sarah. Right.
Sorry.
So you ran out of
But it's really
things.
Good. This is good.
This is like an extra bonus.
It is.
From
so
something else.
This is the TED Business podcast, and it's called The Emotions Behind Your Money Habits. And it's a guy called Robert Abel. He's an accountant. And it's really short. You listen to it for like 13 minutes. And I really enjoyed listening to that. I found it helpful. And he talks about how basically your relationship with money reflects your relationship with your life. So, and how a spreadsheet can actually tell a story about who you are and what's important to you. And almost by coincidence, I didn't know this is what he was going to talk about. Me and my partner have actually been through this exact exercise really recently. And so what you do is you do a spreadsheet where you sort of say, here's everything I've spent in the last 6 months, and you categorize it. There are even like some banks and I think and apps that do this for you. So you'd be like, oh, I spent this much on food or on health or on fun stuff, whatever categories you sort of want to come up with. Then you view that spending with a kind of inquisitive and curious mind. So you're not trying to blame yourself or beat yourself up. You're just trying to look for patterns and ask yourself, is there anything you are shocked or surprised by? And his point is, sometimes our money knows us better than we know ourselves. And having done this exact exercise really recently, prompted by my partner not working at the moment, so we were going, we sort of need to think about our finances and do a bit of rejigging, certainly like in the short term. We actually did this and realized that we spent way more than we realized on takeaways. So I talked about how much, like,
that doesn't surprise me. You're always having a takeaway.
Not anymore. Okay. Not since the old spreadsheet came into life.
Are you cooking more in now?
Well, when you say me, I mean, I'm not cooking more. But his whole point is, it's the difference between avoiding versus being accountable. So I would have always said, like, oh yeah, we definitely get a few takeaways. Like, I love food. That feels, you know, I'm not going to apologize for that. That's something I really enjoy. But when you do the spreadsheet, I was surprised by like the frequency and just like the number, you know, as in like the amount of money you're then spending on that thing. Basically, Deliveroo is making a lot of money from my house. And then you sort of ask yourself, okay, so like, why is that? Is it because you're having a particularly busy week? Is it because you're stressed? Are you doing it when you're stressed and when you're celebrating? You know, like almost, it's interesting to see what are the behaviors that are driving that spend. And then thinking about, do you feel good about that? Does that make you feel proud about spending that money? Or is there something you want to try doing differently? And so I think the reason I liked listening to him is I was like, it felt really practical and it felt very doable. And having done it, and that was a pure coincidence, it's meant that things like, we still get takeaways because I love getting a takeaway, but we probably get like 70% less. We probably just get like one every week or one every other week. And suddenly you spend a lot less and then I feel good about that. Or you realise things like, recently, I was actually telling Helen this week, I realised I was spending like twice as much on my internet as I probably should be. And it sort of prompts you to just reevaluate how you're spending your money, but not in a way that made me feel bad, in a way that actually made me think, I'm going to do something about that. I'm going to take that accountability. So it's quite a simple thing. And I'm sure some people listening are probably already very on top of this stuff and have done it before. I certainly hadn't. I hadn't sort of looked at my money in this way. And I think then you can sort of, my partner, I have to say, is an accountant. So this spreadsheet that we have created is incredible. I'm also not allowed to touch it because I might mess up I think there are formulas and all sorts. What's interesting is my partner just enjoys the process of the spreadsheet. I think I enjoy the so what of the spreadsheet. He actually enjoys creating it and tracking it, but I'm not sure if he'd necessarily do anything that differently. Whereas I sort of go, oh, that's really interesting. I think I could spend a bit less on Amazon, or I could spend a bit less on takeaways, or I could reduce my internet and still get the same broadband that I need. So that's been a very practical thing that I can personally say has been really helpful for me. And then listening to that podcast, I was like, oh, that's him sort of reinforcing something that I have experienced as being really, really helpful.
You know, I love a scale and a matrix.
Obviously.
And listening to you makes me think about like a scale where on one end of the scale, you've got wasteful, and on the other end of the scale, you've got watchful. And I was listening to you and thinking, I really don't think I'm very good at managing money at all. And I think that I avoid, to your point, I kind of actually avoid looking at it. So I would very rarely go into my bank account because I'm like, oh gosh, there's loads of stuff that I probably should stop subscribing to, or I've probably done like, you know, like way too many top-up shops in a week. Like, you know, those ones that where you incrementally spend more because you're doing like lots of top-up shops. And it makes me think probably if I was to look at a scale at the moment between wasteful and watchful, I'd be much more towards wasteful because I avoid looking, because I think it's almost a bit scary. But I think if I could become more watchful and almost think of like one small change a week, and maybe that's too frequent, or like, you know, one action for money management a month. You love the alliteration. But I think I could make sort of incremental improvements. Spending loads of time in my bank balance and completely changing the way that I live and spend feels a bit daunting. But thinking, is there one subscription that I could cancel? Is there one top-up shop that I could stop? Like one small action a week or something like that. I think over time I could probably become more watchful and less wasteful. But I think a radical change overnight just makes me think, oh, no, I'll just do that another day.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to view it. It is interesting because we've been thinking about this topic for 3 or 4 weeks. And I think because it has been a hard topic to find books that we could both really connect with on, but I have spent quite a lot of time thinking about money. So, I mean, lots of companies are not as well off now because of this, because I have probably changed or cancelled or realised that I was spending money in certain places, to exactly to your point, that was wasteful. And it's really been a prompt for me to do something about that. So that's probably what it's made me do differently. So reading Jen's book, listening to the podcast, reading some other books, and even like reading Laura's book, which, like I say, sort of described in very simple terms to me some things that I probably didn't understand that well, just made me start to go, am I being as accountable as I could be with my money? Also made me think a bit about who do I admire in terms of how they sort of not necessarily spend their money, but almost like manage their money. And I've got a couple of friends where I feel like they're really on top of it. You know, they're very organized and they've got a really positive relationship with money. They would talk about it very kind of openly, not in a showing off as in I've got loads of money, but as in they're confident about they have taken that accountability. And then I see that in just how they describe the decisions that they've made that are kind of right for them. And I admire that. So there is a bit actually in Jen's book about your relationship with money is also impacted by the people you're spending time with right now, as well as the people you grew up with. And I have got a couple of friends where I was like, oh, I think they do this really well already. So I could probably, and I think previously I've discounted myself and gone, oh, but I couldn't do that because that's just not me. Back to beliefs that can get in your way. Whereas now I've sort of challenged myself to go, well, why couldn't that be me? And is that actually just about taking that a bit more accountability and having just feeling a bit more proud about how I manage my own money? So who would you recommend the book that you read to, Helen?
I think as long as you're not looking for quick tips. So if you want a kind of quick tips, this isn't the book for that because you have to work very hard to kind of get something useful in from an action perspective out of it. But I think if you have got a bit of time to think about money and you want to think about your relationship with money, it's actually got a nice couple of stories in there, slightly weights it towards Warren Buffett. There's a lot of Warren Buffett. And there's a lot of Bill Gates references in the book. But if you want some stories to bring it to life, if you've got some time to think about money, I think this is a good book. If you want to take action, if you're already in the headspace of I need to do something differently, this probably isn't the first book to read. But if you're just thinking, maybe I could do something different with money, maybe I'd like to improve my relationship with money and understand it a bit more, and you've got the time to reflect on it, that is who I would suggest this book to. What about yours? Long pause.
So I think if you like the title of this book...
And repeat it, Sarah, because you said it so positively.
You Are a Badass at Making Money.
Sounds great.
So if you like the sound of that title, I suspect you might like the book. If you are very on board with the word awesome and manifesting, then I think, and visualization.
I'm so proud of you for reading this book.
I think you might enjoy it. There are some useful things in there, but they are repeated, I would say, quite frequently. And I did have to work quite hard to get through the book. You know, and books, not every book is for everybody. And this just wasn't a book for me. But as we have talked about, I think there are some, because it has prompted me, though, to think about money and to think about my relationship with money, how I've grown up thinking about money, where I am with money today. And so I'm really glad that we chose it as a topic, because, again, I really enjoyed listening to that TED podcast, which I would recommend to everybody. Yeah, it's just a really interesting 13-minute listen. And so spending some time, I think, thinking about money in relation to the work that you do, how you're living your life, is a useful thing. Whether this book is the right thing to help you do that, I think will be very personal to you and whether you like those style of books.
And so a quote then, Sarah, from the book that you worked very hard to read. Did any particular statement or sentence stick?
Yeah, there was one, which I do actually, this one sentence I do really like.
Is it that you are an awesome badass?
Absolutely not. It was, because we are creatures of habit who tend to have our words on repeat, they become like a chisel that forms grooves in our minds. Playing the same stories over and over, anchoring in our thoughts and beliefs and defining our reality. I think that one, if it had just been that one sentence, that would have been really helpful for me, that book.
Also, I feel like the way you read it, it gives real gravity to that quote as well. So maybe if you read the audiobook, like if you were the voice of the audiobook, it might give it that gravity behind the awesomeness.
I don't want to read that audiobook.
Sarah is not picking up that monkey. My quote, see what you think about this one. Financial success is not a hard science. It's a soft skill where how you behave is more important than what you know.
I like that. Yeah. And it gets you away from, you know, I said to you, I think I've got a bit of a fixed mindset sometimes about my ability with money, whereas that suggests it's not about that.
Yeah. It's thinking about your behaviours, you know, why you're spending, why you need to do that, what's driving it, rather than do you know the current interest rate or APR that you're paying on a credit card type stuff. Like, you don't have to be an expert. It's more about your experience and your beliefs around money, which actually, even though these two books are very different, I think is something that connects the two. So what we will do is we will create a pod sheet for you, everybody, that has summary of some of the things we talked about, some of the bits that have really helped us and made us think differently, some of those questions that Sarah shared as well. If you kind of want to do some money visualization or get a more positive association with money, they're actually definitely actions I'm going to do. I like those ones. You can download that pod sheet from the link on the show description, which tends to be on Apple Podcasts, or you can just go to amazingif.com, our website, and you'll be able to find that. If you ever can't find any of our resources, by the way, it's just Helen and Sarah at squigglycareers.com, and we'll send them to you. You can also sign up for Pod Mail, which is a weekly email which curates it all to make it super easy for you as well.
So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll be back with you again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.